Hari
Srila Prabhupada elaborates on the same point. This phenomenal world is impersonally the representation of Vasudev, because the ingredients of its creation, their interaction and enjoyer of the resultant action, the living beings, are all produced by the external and internal energies of Sri Krishna. Right? So creation, interaction, and enjoyer. So your sambandha abhideya prayojana aspects are all coming from Krishna. This is confirmed in the Gita 7:4-5. The ingredients, namely earth, water, fire, air, and sky, as well as the conception of material identity, intelligence, and the mind. We did it yesterday.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just reviewing.
Okay, sorry.
Are produced by the external energy of the Lord. The living entity who enjoys the interaction of the above gross and subtle ingredients is set up by eternal time. As set up by eternal time, is an offshoot of internal potency, with freedom to remain either in the material world or in the spiritual world. Right? So, time is eternal, so it's not a product of material energy, but the concept of time, how it's applied, where you see past, present, and future, that's caused by the material. Otherwise, eternal time doesn't have that. There's the conception, but there's not actually the effect. You know what I'm saying? Here you're forced by time, you know, that it moves. In the spiritual world, it doesn't work like that. Yes.
So it would be tempting to think that they would be an illusion when there is the conception, but it's not actually there.
And there's a problem with this illusion. No, because then there's the yoga maya.
Because
it's about relationships. So when you're dealing with a relationship, that's a reality. So you have the tattva, where you have the facts, and then you have application of the facts in relationship.
Yeah.
Of the two, the relationship's more important, because the facts are only a situation.
Yes. Yes.
So the situation is non-interactive, right? Yeah. So then acting within that, that's dynamic. The other's static. So you have to have both, but the rasa is the primary. So in rasa, then there's always the element of viewing the relationship from the point of attachment, right? So the particular aspect of appreciation or attachment in that process, that's what's going to generate, you know, the interaction. But now, how you're viewing it is because you see particular qualities. One could say, no, but one should be in knowledge. But knowledge means Krishna has unlimited qualities. How are you going to view that all at once? How are you going to work with them all at once? Krishna doesn't, because the point is variety means that you're working with different ones at different times. Right? So it's not a problem. So then, that means there must be some element of transcendental illusion that you're only noticing that one and not other ones. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, okay, the mother is there and her, you know, 50-year-old son is there, And she's complaining that, you know, he's not taking care of his health. You know, he's not, you know, dressing always appropriately for the weather. He's getting himself sick. He's working too hard. You know, he should, you know, be more careful and take care. And then the son explains, but Mom, as the prime minister, I got to do this and I got to do that and all these things. He says, I don't care. He says, you know, your health's more important. If you're sick, how are you going to do your work? So are we dealing with some illusion here or not?
A little bit.
But the point is, what is the illusion based on?
The relationship.
So in other words, the closeness, the intimacy is greater. Therefore, the significance of prime minister really doesn't mean anything. Right? Not in her relationship with the son. Now with the relationship with their friends. Now that's a trump card.
Yes.
You know, like that.
Oh, your son is a doctor. Yeah. Well,
mine's a prime minister. Yeah, mine was a doctor. Yeah. Like really was. What does he do now? He's prime minister. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it'll work. Yeah, you understand? Yeah. So there's an illusion there, and so you're looking at that. So you're only going to be concentrating on one thing at a time. Right, there's going to be some primary quality, and then everything else will base around that. That's why we see is when it's discussing qualities, sometimes it appears that the list works in this way, at other times the list works in that way. It's because whichever one's prominent, then the others fall into place in a particular way. Does that make sense? So that's why then you get all the different varieties of bhava. Right, because the anubhava and the sanchari bhava and the Haikai Sattvika Bhavas, these are simply responses to the particular kind of love that comes up at the time that's based on the particular quality of Krishna that gets one's attention. Right? That's how it functions. So the illusion is not a problem. The illusion's a problem here because the attachment, then we don't see the position, we don't see the transcendental position. We're not seeing Krishna, we're not seeing the living entities, the soul. We're simply seeing the dead matter, and seeing the dead matter is the real thing. But in the spiritual world, there is no dead matter, so then there's no problem.
Yeah. So that means that when we're dealing with Mahamaya, Tattva is prominent, and with Yogamaya...
Then Rasa is prominent. Yeah. That's the whole thing. Because We switch from rasa to tattva here because if we're involved in the rasa here, we won't become aware of the rasa there. You know, we think what we're doing is great. You know what I'm saying? If you're sitting in the, you know, writing down the, you know, the main drag and you're, you know, top down 57 Chevy with five other crazy nuts in the back yelling and screaming and hooting and everything like that, you know, with a couple of girls thrown in, then you might not be open really to the subtleties of the Krishna's rasa dance in Braj.
You won't have Purusha Shukta on the radio.
Good chance you won't. You know, it's something about somebody trying to be a Purusha, but all kinds of stupid stuff on the radio. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So he has the freedom to remain in the material world and the spiritual world. In the material world, the living entity is enticed by deluding nescience. But in the spiritual world, he is in the normal condition of spiritual existence without any delusion. Because the delusion is that it's absorbed in Krishna. Now, you're only absorbed in a particular part of Krishna. That's the yoga maya. So there's no illusion. It's just that being only absorbed in one aspect is not a problem. Just like here, we're only absorbed in one aspect at a time. But we're in delusion because that one aspect of Krishna that we're absorbed in, we don't attribute it to Krishna, we attribute it to the material energy. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. You think that we're having a great time because we're driving around the car. But the point is that movement and all that, that's that experience, that's Krishna. They think it's the car. But actually it's Krishna. So in the spiritual world, you know it's Krishna. It's not the other aspect. As soon as it switches, then it loses its position. right? Just like when Krishna's with the gopis, as soon as they're thinking how fortunate they are and how special they are, then immediately then the rasa's not happening. So Krishna goes off with Radharani because it's never not going to happen there. Right? The living entity is known as the marginal potency of the Lord. But in all circumstances, neither the material ingredients nor the spiritual parts and parcels are independent of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. For all things, whether products of the external, internal, and marginal potencies of the Lord, are simply displays of the same effulgence of the Lord, just as light, heat, and smoke are displays of fire. Right? So you're talking about Brahman as substance of existence. So that means all of his potencies are manifestations of existence. Right? He exists as this potency or that potency. Right? So all of them are examples of transcendence of this Brahman. Do you understand? But he's the source of Brahman. Does that make sense? So that means everything is Brahman. That's what Prabhupada was saying before. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. But this is, in the proper context, it's not Brahman is the supreme, so there is no variety. So that means there is no energies, there is no jivas, there is no nothing. No, there's all those things are there, but that's still just the existence of it. Then, because existence is the tattva, right? Tattva means discussing the existence of something. Rasa means discussing the interaction of those elements of tattva.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's just not a problem, as you see here, is that these let me say. You know, these are the points that Prabhupada's giving in the Bhagavatam. So this is the second canto. So we don't have a difficulty with dealing with the Brahman platform, because Brahman simply means spiritually situated. That's all it means. Sat, you're on the eternal platform. Right? But then when you throw in chit, you know, knowledge is there. So they have sat and the knowledge side of the chit, but not the action side of chit. Because the action side of chit is what generates ananda, happiness. So that's why technically Brahmananda isn't that great, because it's only the experience of existing on the transcendental platform. But ananda is the experience of acting on the transcendental platform. You understand? So there's a difference here. So that's coming from Krishna. It's just his qualities. So his qualities is what everything is. Everything is a manifestation of his qualities. So his quality of being the smallest, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
So Paramatma, is that some kind of in-between between sattva and rasa? Or where? How do we...
Means he himself is Bhagavan, but we're only seeing the aspect that he's the supreme and the controller. So we're not actually seeing him as a person, how he acts as a person, we're simply seeing him as the controller of the material world. These are the laws, and he sees that they go well. That's all. We're not bringing into it, why is he doing that? Because we take, God is the judge. Okay? God's the judge. You do something good, you get good result. You do something bad, you get a less, not so nice result. Okay. And, you know, then we hear about that, you know, he's jealous. Okay, but why? Why when you do good, you get good, and you do bad, you get bad? Why is that? That's never a question. It never comes up. Why? Because that means then you're dealing with Bhagavan. God is a person. So that's why we say localized. He's a person, but he's localized to just that part. And then you can either take that localized and go forward into personal or backwards into impersonal. Does that make sense? So now, if we're talking about here, God, okay, who's God? Okay, he's the supreme. Okay, he's the creator. He's all this and that. He's the judge. He's, a, you know, so many things like this. Okay, so who is he as a person? Oh, he's not a person. He's impersonal. So now, who are we dealing with in this realization of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? And from that position, which way do they go? You understand?
Yes.
In other words, the conception of the personal conception, monotheistic personal conception of God in world religions is actually dealing with Paramatma.
Yes.
That's on a good day, right? And when you go further into it, when they actually focus on that, they'll take it back to the impersonal. They won't take it forward to the personal. Right?
Yes.
That makes sense. But you can talk elements of personal.
Yes.
It's quite compatible to their position, because Paramatma is a person. But at the same time, if they take it go too much into depth, they'll move it back to impersonal. Because Paramatma is being a person, then it's either you're going to look at the generic, localized aspect and go back to the impersonal, or the personal aspect and move forward. It's not a position to stay at. The yogis either move forward into bhakti or backwards into impersonalism. Right? The devotees are in the personal, the impersonalists are in the impersonal. Anybody stays at that position? No. Right? So when they go, when the yogis, they sit with Brahma, they'll either go into Brahman or go to Vaikuntha. Do you understand? So that's the whole point.
So it's kind of like mode of passion.
Yeah, you could say, because it's about what they'll get from the relationship. Yeah, but I'm saying there must be some element of goodness to understand, but at the same time it's mixed with passion and ignorance. So it's not pure goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Just one question came to my mind. In Satya Yuga, they have a process like Ashtanga Yoga or the meditation, so they cannot achieve perfection.
But what do you mean by perfection?
I mean, you said that you get for continue with bhakti, and the yogis.
Your bhakti will give you prema. The impersonalist gives you perfection.
The yogis cannot get.
But they can get perfection. Perfection means transcend. You're on the spiritual platform.
But they have to move on from this.
They'll either move on. It means, in other words, bhakti generates bhakti. Jnana doesn't generate bhakti. What are they doing that's devotional that they would be involved in prema? Right? They're meditating on the Lord simply that the mind becomes peaceful and they become freed from material entanglement. Where's the devotion? It's simply about their anxiety of being in the material world and getting rid of that. Does that make sense? So there isn't something beyond that. So where is the bhakti? So it'll only situate themselves spiritually, not transcendentally. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the point is if everything's Brahman anyway, being here, you are liberated and situated in the Brahman platform. You're just not transcendental to this situation. Because it's all Brahman anyway. It's an illusion to think that it's material. We call it material because that's how everybody views it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what do we call this this particular manifestation of material energy?
Rock.
A rock. Okay, yeah, was it?
That's a trick question.
Was it a trick question? Yeah, this is a rock, because this is what you call it, but it's still just the same atoms of earth, water, fire, and ether. Just a particular combination, so we call it a rock. But it's still the same thing. Okay, let's say I have a basket of apples, okay? I stack them up into a pyramid, right? So I can call it a pyramid, but in reality, what is it? It's apples. What if I make it into a nice shape like a boat? You know, you can call it a boat, but it's still apples. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's still Brahman. But you make it into these different things. You call it by that because that's the platform on which you can interact. But in reality, it's still Brahman. Right? So technically, it's not a big deal being liberated. Being liberated is just recognizing the position you're in. That's all. That's why we don't take it as a very major step. Right? The impersonalists, oh, that's their goal, they're all in all. But for us, that's all you're doing is recognizing the position you're already in. Right? I mean, it's like in the morning, somebody wakes up. Okay? They were having a dream, and now they wake up, the dream stops. Is there like a stadium full of people there cheering them on and, you know, waving flags and, you know, people have painted their face different colors and, you know, is this going on? You know, people are being crushed to death. You know, it's all part of the scene. You know, it's like, you know, the guy woke up, hey, you know. Is it? Is that the way it works at your house? So, yeah, you understand? Is it a big deal? The guy woke up in the morning. Hey, what happened there? Yeah, I woke up. Yeah, wow, cool. Okay, yeah. So you woke up. Yeah, you know, I was asleep, and then I woke up, you know. So I said, yeah, okay, yeah. So, and then? No, what do you mean, and then? Don't you get the significance? I woke up. You know, it says, yeah, so it's okay. And I bet you got out of bed also, right? You know, probably brushed your teeth, you know, like that. It says, yeah, but you can only do that if you woke up. So, you know, is this conversation getting anywhere? Is anybody anywhere going to consider this as really important? Why not? Right? Because the people, their interaction, that's what's important. So therefore, being liberated is no big deal. You woke up, big deal. Nice. But the only point is it's an advantage because now you can interact. You understand? So that's the whole point. So impersonalism is not a big deal. It's simply the spiritual platform. So everybody's on the spiritual platform. All the energies are on the spiritual platform. Therefore, the point is it's all just a display of the Brahman. You understand? But now what you do with that display, now that's what's significant. Right? So the interaction of the devotees with the Lord, that's what's significant. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay?
My question, another part. So why is Satyuga has this process?
Why shouldn't it have the process? Right now we have Grihastha Ashram. Knock me out. Where is the spiritual element? You got married. What got married? Did the souls get married? Or two bodies with their, you know, subtle components? And then you're going to interact? What's interacting? Are the souls interacting? Right? You understand? Technically? No. So it's through a medium. In other words, the souls are interacting through the medium of Grihastha life. So you can use that either to realize Krishna, because you have to use something as a medium of expression. So you can use that Grihastha life or not. You can use it for material, you can use it for spiritual. So now, Grihastha life can be engaged in the Lord's service. Then why in Satya Yuga they can't use meditation on Vishnu in Lord's service? You know what I'm saying? Definitely one would have. It's like if you practice Grihastha life and you're good at it, you can get up to, you know, up to the level of Prajapatis, you know? Okay, which is the fourth planet down of the Satya Yuga constellation, right? But if you do yoga, which ones do you end up on? The higher one. So then why would you have a doubt about yoga? Does that make sense? It's a medium. Yoga is a medium. Deity worship's a medium. In this age, you know, minimal qualification. So therefore, how you say?
Expectations.
Yeah, so you just stick to the essence, which is to do meditation, you have to chant. right? To do yajna, you have to chant. To do deity worship, you have to chant. In this age, we just chant. Okay? So that's all. It's just a matter of they have the qualification, they do it. No big deal. Okay? Yes?
Yes, ma'am. So, both Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So, a person who is in the Bhagavan level, is as bhakti, automatically he is aware about the Brahman and automatically of Paramatma.
Means, is a person on the Bhagavan platform aware of Brahman and Paramatma? If they want to be. But when you're in relationship, what's the need? Right? The cowherd boys with Krishna, do they really care that he's situated in everybody's heart in the material world and managing it?
No.
They're worried about, you know, whose lunch they're stealing, or you know who's doing leapfrog, or you know, stuff like that. And do they worry that they're situated on the transcendental platform? They're only interested in Krishna. So that's the whole point, is the personal already includes those. You don't have to deal with them separately. We deal with them separately simply because we're dealing on an illusory Bhagavan platform, that we think everything's personal and we're all interacting, but it's not. It's just, it's an illusion that what we're dealing with is has the reality we attribute it. You know, it's like children. They get together with all their stuff and, the dolls are flying in the sky and getting, you know, Barbie and Ken are getting married for the 273rd time, you know, like that, you know. And so, and that's just over the summer, right? You know, like that. So, you know, all these things are going on. So it's a matter of what's the reality. So we've put our attachment into dead matter, and therefore applying the personal thing on dead matter. But how personal is dead matter?
Not so much.
Yeah, not so much. Right. So that's the whole point. We're learning. We're dealing with the Brahman to understand it's the dead matter is not what's significant. It's the Brahman that's significant, the transcendental element of it, how Krishna's pervaded it as his qualities and his energies. Right? So the primary creation, that's what pervades everything. That's the universal form. That's what's significant. Seeing that, then we can understand whatever I'm dealing with, its importance is this connection with Krishna, not separate than that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point.
Kumar, the attachment would shift from the dead matter of the body to the progress that jiva makes towards Krishna.
Yes, I mean, you start seeing the living entities. You interact with them based on their conditioning. Right? I mean, it's just like the living entity in the form of a dog. You deal with them as a dog. You know, therefore the famous, I think it was Ramakrishna, he was making chapatis and the dog came and stole one of the chapatis, and he's running after the dog saying, wait, take some ghee. Because everyone's Narayan, right? Oh. Sat, so he was in his worship to Narayan, and you know, but then the whole point is that everything's Narayan, the chapati is also Narayan, so then it's It falls apart. It sounds great. It catches people's attention. You can tell a story like that, and everyone goes, "Yes, right." You know. So that's the thing. These guys were clever. They were clever at illusion. Okay. Okay, the living entity is known as the marginal potency of the Lord, but in all circumstances, neither the material ingredients nor their spiritual parts and parcels are independent of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. For all things, whether products of the external, internal, or marginal potencies of the Lord, are simply displays of the same effulgence of the Lord. Right, so products of, right? So what's being manifest is simply product. That's Brahman. That's they exist, right? We're saying no, but this is impersonal. We're only talking about their existence is based on the existence principle. Brahman is existence. So there's not a problem. Then we have with that, then there's Chit and Ananda. Right? So the bhakti element is there. So you have the situation of Brahman, the elements of Brahman, and they're interacting based on bhakti. So Chit and Ananda. Then it works nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. Just as light, heat, and smoke are displays of fire, none of them are separate from the fire. All of them combine together to be called fire. Similarly, all phenomenal manifestations, as well as the effulgence of the body of Vasudeva, are his impersonal features, whereas he eternally exists in his transcendental form called Satchitananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita 5.1, distinct from all conceptions of the material ingredients mentioned before. Right, so he's distinct from that because he's the source of that Brahman. Right? So he is Brahman, is superior to the material energy Brahman, and superior to the living entities who can be absorbed in the material Brahman or in the spiritual, because he's the source of all of that. Does this make sense? Yes? We're doing okay here, that we're talking about Brahman as if it's just normal stuff. Yes.
What are we trying to prove here?
What are we trying to prove?
No, it's obvious something.
It's obvious, but the point is that this element, if it's non-different from the Lord, are we looking for that element? Yes, so that's the thing. So this is bringing it out again and again, that we understand that we're talking about Krishna, but Krishna is a person beyond all this. All this is actually his energy that he's in control of. So, therefore, the first step is deal with it as Krishna's, how he would like it to be dealt with. And then why? Because he's a person. You know what I'm saying? So we have all the things that we do in our life, so, but we tend to see it different from its transcendental position. Does that make sense? Okay. So we get into the element of rasa, which is fine, because as we see in the spiritual world, then that rasa is superior to that understanding of the generic understanding of Brahman. So the tattva is always subservient to rasa. Right? But in the material world, it switches. So here, the rasa here is taking us farther away from Krishna. The tattva is making us aware of Krishna's position. Now, how we're dealing with it, then it makes you aware of Krishna as a person, because it's his Brahman. It's his energies. But the impersonalist only makes one aware of Brahman, so it's superior in that you're getting out of the illusion. But they just put you into, they maintain another aspect of the illusion, that they're still dealing with the temporary situation. They're not bringing in the personal aspect. Right? So they only kind of come to the neutral state. They don't actually come to the positive state. They're saying, bhakti, that's positive. Brahman, that's neutral. Attachment, that's negative. You understand? So bhakti means attachment to Krishna. That's positive. Attachment to the material energy, that's negative.
So attachment is the medium. Right?
Attachment is the medium. So attachment is not the problem. It's where you're applying the attachment. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you have a nail. Is the nail the problem?
No.
Now let's say I'm taking the nail, I put it, you know, in the piece of wood, you know, because to put it, I have to hold it first, right? I take my finger, I put it on the wood, okay? Then using the hammer, I hit it into the wood, and I stick the wood into some place where you want it to be. So is the nail a problem? Okay, what if I take the nail, holding it with my fingers, and stick it into an electric socket?
That's a problem.
That's a problem. But is the nail the problem?
No.
No. It's how I'm applying the nail that's the problem. So that's the thing. Is attachment's not the problem. Money's not the problem. None of it's the problem, because it's all Brahman. The difficulty is where you're applying it.
Yes.
You understand? So attachment is a generic element. That's Brahman. I apply it specifically, let's say, to family and friends. Now if it's on the material platform, now it becomes personal, but it's illusory personal. Now if I take attachment from the Brahman and apply it with bhakti to Krishna, now it takes on the personal, but now that's transcendental. That gives happiness. You understand? The economics is generic. I apply it into the material, it creates illusion. I apply it into the spiritual, then one is transcendentally situated. So that's the whole thing. Everything being Brahman, it's to be used in Krishna's service as a person. So realizing it's Brahman, that's only a first step. It's not a goal at all. It's just that's the normal situation, is being situated on the spiritual platform. Then we apply that into serving Krishna. Because if we're transcendental, we're small. Right? We're not the source of everything. If you're not an illusion, you know I did not create all this. I'm not the potent one here. Right? I'm existing. I'm conscious. But where does everything else come from? That means there must be a source. Right? So then the natural thing is I will be connected with the source. I will interact with that source. Right? It means what's the natural thing? Who does the child interact with? Yeah. You understand? So source, they always interact there. You always expect that. That's just natural. So on the transcendental platform, the soul will naturally look at it that way. Right? That they have a source. So all souls will see that. And so then there's something superior, so then that's approached with affection. That's the natural position. Right? So all we're trying to do is break affection by dealing with this. Because now discussing this, now we're discussing material energy and all this and all that. Is it attractive?
No.
Right? Therefore the question, what's the point? This is boring. Right? You know, it's like when we're discussing Prabhu's, you know, marriage and family life. Did that sound great and attractive? You're talking about it, you know, we have dead matter in the form of his body marrying the dead matter in the form of his wife. Did it sound great? He says, yeah, that's what I want. Yeah. Now we're talking. No. So that's the whole point. That's the point of these discussions. Then we start to see it in a different category. So it's not a problem of marriage and all that, because pastimes is this natural position. Right? If one's conscious, one interacts. But pastime must be based on Krishna as the center. If it's based not as Krishna as the center, it's a problem. Just like, okay, we have the child. Okay? They have all the toys. All the toys are really different. But the child's playing. And there's some whole scene going on. Is there any problem, all the different toys? They all match together perfectly. Why?
Because the child is the connection.
Because the child is the connection, the child is the center. So all these contradictory things work together. So that's the whole thing. When Krishna is the center, then all these different activities aren't a problem. It's a problem when they're separate. So the personal is the natural position. You just have to know where to apply it. You know, so for children, if you tell them that it's supposed to be connected with Krishna and all that, they actually have no problem with it. Adults are the ones that have the problem. You know. Does that make sense?
It is why we need to study.
Huh?
It is why we need to study.
That's why you need to study.
Take out the problem.
Yeah. Okay?
Yeah.
Like that. So this just comes up now and again, but when it comes up, then we see the significance of it. So, you know, it means it's always going to be a bit on the dry side, That's why Krishna makes the point, is that he is all this, but he's beyond this. So that's the difference, is we have no difficulty discussing it because we know it's connected to Krishna.
Yes.
But it's not, doesn't have the taste of the pastimes.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So that's why the name Ishwara isn't as significant as Krishna. Because one's dealing with his relationship, one's dealing with just his position as the Supreme. So that's the whole point. For us, the greatness and all that, that's not what's wonderful. It's the application of that in relationship that's special. That's the difference between majesty and sweetness. Right? So Krishna's the center in both. But it's just one you're adding in that touch of the tattva, so it gives a different flavor. Like that. It's like spicing. You have the, you add a spice, it adds a flavor. So
we have experienced sometimes when a preacher can tell a story and tattva comes from the story, it just becomes so attractive.
Yes.
So
yeah, no, true. Yeah. So those who can do that, that's good.
It's like the sugar coating on the medicine.
Yeah. It's really good. And that's why Purana is the prominent, is because people can relate to it better than Vedanta and the Upanishad. Because we notice when we get into that, then the question always comes up. Are we supposed to be talking about this? Yeah. Didn't we talk about this, 3 years ago? That was enough. Okay. When he offered his obeisances to Lord Vasudeva, Brahma addressed him as Jagat Guru. As his first disciple in the universe, Brahma knows well that to save the fallen souls from ignorance, the Lord entrusted the Vedas to him. So blessed, Brahma became the Adi Kavi, the first poet in the universe to sing them. Now Brahma declares that everyone should understand that the Vedic hymns are intended only for the glorification of the supreme deity of the universe, Narayana. Right? They're not for any other purpose. Other purposes are given. Why? Since it's Upasana Khanda, and actually in Upasana Khanda is actually a Kayana. That's why we don't use the term so much. Technically, worship of Vishnu will fall within the Upasana Khanda. But being focused just exclusively on Vishnu, that's called a Kayana. So that comes out from the Pancharatra. That's why Narad Muni preaches Pancharatra. Right? So why is there Upasana of the demigods? Why is there the jnana of the impersonalist? Why is the karma of the karma?
It leads to,
but what's the leading element? What's the dynamic? What's the active ingredient?
The Vedas. The Vedas,
yes, but I'm saying why? Why would the Vedas do that?
To accommodate all.
But why would you want to accommodate?
Because then they're on a common path which will lead them to
they're on a common path that leads them to Narayana. Okay. And whose path is it?
Krishna's
path. That's the point. Keep them on Krishna's path. Right? And at the same time, as we look at it, because we've discussed everything's come on, everything is Krishna's path anyway. But the path has two directions. Right?
Towards
and yeah, you understand? So the karma kanda, the jnana kanda, upasana kanda, that which way are they going on the path?
Away from Krishna.
Out.
No. Towards Krishna.
They're towards Krishna, but it's not that they're not going backwards.
Yeah.
Right. It means like this. The guy is dancing, he's going forward, great, everybody likes it. But then when he dances backwards, you understand? Then it becomes something unique and special. You know what I'm saying? Of dance moves, how many can you give a name for? Right? So unless you did ballet or something, then... Right? Now, probably everyone on the planet knows the term moonwalk. But do they know pirouette? Do they know all these other things? No, never heard of it. You understand? You know, so it's not that people are happy with that, going one direction but doing it backwards. You know, it's like when you go the other direction, you do it in the bucket. you know, slides better.
So in that analogy, I'm moving towards Krishna, but looking to the material energy.
Yes, that's the thing. So the devotee is moving towards Krishna, looking at Krishna. Mm-hmm. So the whole point is they're all bahir move. But now let us say, you have the all these different personalities. Okay, now they're standing on Krishna's path. And they're closer to Krishna, their back is turned to Krishna. Okay? Let us say like the Brahmavadi. So now he's not involved in any of the material, so where does that situate him on the path? Right? Spiritual, so it's in between the material and spiritual world. But he's facing the material world, right? Okay? Yeah. Now, what happens if you convince him to turn around?
He's very
where is he? He's basically from there can start Bhava Bhakti.
Yes.
Okay? Not bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, let us say you go down and you get one of you get your brush and the paper dustpan and all that and go digging around in the gutter, down on Second Avenue. Okay, what are you gonna pick up? Right? You're gonna catch yourself a hippie. Okay. Now, where is he situated in this road from Krishna, to how you say, Hell in a Bucket? In fact, probably that's his favorite song. Right? Okay? How many of the regulative principles is he following?
Zero.
Five.
Huh? 7.5.
Maybe some other regulative principles than the one we follow.
Well, it's like I heard it was popular in L.A. one time, then, they would follow the three regulative principles. No meat, no fish, no eggs. Like that. So it depends on how you're counting.
Yeah.
So now he's looking, on Krishna's path and quite, down near to basically dropping off the edge into animal life, right? Depending upon how free they are, trees is a good one. Dogs, they really like dogs. You're just on the edge of falling off into animal species, okay? Now, you turn him around. Now he's facing Krishna. Good. But how far does he have to get to that transcendental platform?
It takes a while.
It can be very quick. It can be done in a moment, as shown by Moksha Kundamar. But it also, if he gets distracted by all these elements, because that's what it's saying, is that spiritual world, they're not distracted by the facility. So in the material world, if you get distracted, you'll be a problem. You don't progress. So that's the difficulty. So the more cultured, the more one's following, either knowingly or unknowingly, the Vedic rules and regulations, then the closer you're situated. So when you turn around, it's easier for you. So that's why it's recommended. That's why the Vedas accommodated. Because then you're following authority. Right? You're doing your duty. You have a service attitude. You're clean. You're sense controlled. All the qualities useful in practice of devotional service. But they're not performing devotional service. All you have to do is add that one element. Right? So in other words, if I have no zeros and I add one, what do I have?
One.
Okay. Let's say I have 10 zeros and I add one. Very big number.
100,000.
Yeah. You understand? So that's the whole idea, is that Vedic culture. A few more. Yeah. We're talking about a good number here. If you were making that annually, you'd be happy. Not only him. Most likely anybody. Right? So, Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea of the Vedic, is that's why it's recommended, because then your situation is better. So the point is it's all Brahman, but it's a matter of the quality of the Brahman in which you're situating yourself. So then you situate yourself in something that's closer to the spiritual world. You know, the residents of Vrindavan, they do their duties. Though it's done spontaneously. Right? A relationship that you can count on what the person is going to do. Though at the same time as you don't know necessarily the detail of it. Krishna knows the cowherd boys will want to play. Right? So, but what they'll play, how it'll work out, which part of Vrindavan, whether they're, you know, running around, climbing trees, playing in the Jamuna, you know, that's a detail, but you know that they're going to be willing to do that. They're going to be joking and laughing, even when they come to the Goshala in the morning. They're going to be joking and laughing. Right? But Mother Yashoda, it's not so much that kind of joking and laughing. You can have a little bit. But not so much. You know what I'm saying? It has a different flavor. But Mother Yashoda always wants to see and take care of Krishna. He's fed nicely, dressed nicely, arrangements are nice, everything's nice. Right? She has a bed situated 100 steps from where he eats. So getting up, washing his hand, and walking to take rest, it's 100 steps. That's what Ayurveda recommends before you take a nap. Why is it there?
Krishna likes it like that.
Krishna likes it like that, but who arranged it?
Mother Yashoda's house?
Yes. Yes. So she's arranged it. Why? Because she cares about Krishna, wants the best for Krishna. Right? So you can imagine how big the house is. You know, it's not that it's a small house and you have to walk around the room 20 times, you know, and then that, you know, like that. You know, it's a big house. I think there's 100 rooms in Nanda Bhavan, and she's got a use for each one of them, all connected to Krishna. Like that. So it's big. It's not off the American model. Or yeah, the living room and all the rooms off of that. It's slightly different.
The temple is in the center today. There's a temple in the center and there's all the rooms around it.
No, it means there's so many. There's so many layers of rooms and all that. They're big, these things.
The one we visit today is the original? No, not the, in the underground?
Probably not exactly. Unless you saw 100 rooms there. If you're seeing 100 rooms, amazing, then you're seeing the original. If you see a smaller temple with a bunch of very enthusiastic pujaris like that, then most likely you're not. That's the spot. So that's... The demigods serve Narayana as the senses of his cosmic form. One who sees these devas through the eye of the Vedas learns that Vishnu Bhakti, what Vishnu Bhakti is. Right, so through the Upasana, then you see it goes back to Krishna. All planets are meant to be places of his worship. Different sacrifices are meant to please him. So then the endeavors, the situations you're in, the endeavors, the demigods, yoga, tapasya, and jnana are meant for ultimate salvation. Which means to quit the temporary manifestation of birth and death and gain admittance to a supreme abode where the Siddha Bhaktas serve him eternally. So all the aspects are meant for that. 15:16. In his purport to verse 15, Srila Prabhupada writes, the supreme worshipable deity is Narayana. The demigods are recommended secondarily for worship in relation to Narayana because the demigods are assisting hands in the management of the universal affairs. As the officers of a kingdom are respected due to their relation to the king, the demigods are worshipped due to their relation to the Lord. Without the Lord's relation, worship of the demigods is unauthorized, avidipurvakam, just as it is improper to water the leaves and branches of a tree without watering its root. Yeah, because the Shastra mentions you can't worship one demigod without another. Okay? Do you see where the problem comes up?
Yes.
How many demigods?
33.
How do you do that puja?
You have to have Narayana or Vishnu.
Yeah, so you worship Narayana. So therefore, if you're worshiping the demigod in connection with Narayana, then it's not a, because you're worshiping the whole, so you're already worshiping all the demigods.
Yes.
And so you don't have to technically worship the demigod, you just have to worship Narayana. You respect the demigod, you don't technically have to worship. But even if you are worshiping, unless you worship in connection with Narayana, then it's actually unauthorized. So people, when they just worship the demigod, it's unauthorized. That's not the Vedic system. The Vedic system is you have to worship Shaligram. Right? You have to worship Shaligram, and then the remnants of that is offered to that demigod.
So like we worship Guru as the representative of Krishna,
yes.
Not as.
Yes. Therefore, the demigods are also dependent on Narayana. All different kinds of sacrifice are performed just to satisfy Lord Narayana with a view to reach him. Right? If you're worshipping to satisfy him to get what you want, then you're conscious of God, it's favorable to God, but it's not free from karma and jnana. Right? Kamsa's thinking of Krishna. He's conscious of Krishna. It's not favorable.
Yes, yes.
But there are those who are conscious and doing the rules that it says. So it's favorable to the Lord. But it's not free from karma and jnana. So that's why it has to have all those. Conscious, favorable, and free from karma and jnana. That's pure. And the best sacrifice recommended in this age of Kali is Sankirtan Yajna, the mainstay of the devotional service of a Narayana Para devotee. Right? So Narayana Para means only focused on Narayana. So that's Ekayana. That's devotional service. Okay. In Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 42, Srila Jiva Goswami comments on verses 15 through 16 as follows. That devotional service is the conclusion of all Vedic scriptures is also confirmed by these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5, 15-16. The Vedic literatures are made by and are meant for the Supreme Lord. The demigods are also meant for serving the Lord as parts of his body. The different planets are also meant for the sake of the Lord. And different sacrifices are performed just to please him. All different types of meditation or mysticism are meant for realizing Narayana. But so, in other words, all these little mystical things, you get into whatever it is, whatever is distracting, all this new age stuff, it's only to realize the Lord. Yeah. It doesn't have a value on its own. Right? Does that make sense? You can't say that, oh, demigod worship, that's nonsense, but new age is fine. Right? It's all nonsense if it's not connected to the Lord. It's all fine if it's connected to the Lord.
Can we say that to the degree that it prepares you for surrendering to Krishna, to that degree it has value?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like for the materialist to be into something more subtle, meditation and mysticism, then it has something that they're aware of something more subtle than themselves, higher powers, the universal kind of, harmony, these things, that's nice. But then they become devotees, then they deal with the reality. But to go from devotional service back into that, that's kind of a step down.
Yes.
You know, it's like you have the curb, and then you get off the curb, there's a little place where all the water... Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
You see, when the supportive becomes the primary, until that time when you give up the control and enjoy mentality?
No, even anyway, it's the support, what we're mentioning here is all these things are useful until you come to devotional service. Once you're in devotional service itself is all that's required. You know what I'm saying? It means somebody, let's say, is into astrology, or they're into... what are they into these days?
Crystals.
Huh?
Crystals?
Crystals, yeah, okay, crystals.
Chakras.
Okay. Well, come out.
They're all coming up. Yeah.
I was thinking UFOs.
Conspiracy.
Those two go together.
Yes.
Same magazine. right? So it makes one aware that there's something beyond oneself, greater things in power, rather than just thinking I'm the center of the universe. So that's a better position to come to Krishna consciousness from. But having understood Krishna is the center of everything and all that, then dropping back into having faith in all these other things, and they become more prominent than devotional service, then that's a waste of time. So it's not a matter of until you give up the controlling and enjoying, because that may take a while, even within devotional service. But the point is it's just, where is the prominence, where's the center? So it has to be Krishna. Because these other things, they're all meant for knowing Krishna. So if your crystals will help you know Krishna, but it has to actually be a direct connection. It can't be, it means you have to make that connection. Of course, it's indirect, but you have to make the connection, not, you know, just, it means there's all kinds of nice things to say, but the reality is, you know, are you remembering, are you dependent upon Krishna? Do you understand? Who has the power, Krishna or the crystal? Right. So all it is Krishna's power. That particular power will come to you through that crystal. You know, not through, let's say, an old shoe or something. You know. So that's where it is. But it's Krishna. It's not the crystal. So if we think it's the crystal, that's where we're deviating.
So then, further to that, are you separating out because you have it? The issue would be the fact that there's a central authority, so you separate all that.
That comes, it's popular these days. If you have authority issues, God being the supreme authority, then there's always these elements of issues.
But
we don't want to do it deal directly, right? You know, so therefore we just attack his laws,
yes.
Right? His culture, his tradition, like that. Then that way we're not bothering Krishna. We like Krishna. You know, it's just like we like the person, but, you know, we harass his kid. You know, or every time his dog goes out in the street, you know, we try to run it over and stuff, you know, like that. So how much do you actually like the person? So that's the point. Of course, you have to distinguish between those who are so absorbed that they just don't care. You know what I'm talking about? There are those individuals. You have to leave them out of this equation. But generally, they've been around a long time and they had personal association with Prabhupada, so they only look at it from that particular perspective. So if it wasn't happening then, they're not interested now, even though Prabhupada talks about it in the book. But it's fine, because they're just absorbed in that. They're fully absorbed, so it works. You know what I'm saying? Because the anxiety is that these things come up and they're separated from Krishna. So you have to see its connection, what its value is. All austerities that are aimed at achieving Narayana. Culture of transcendental knowledge is for getting a glimpse of Narayana. And ultimate salvation is entering the kingdom of Narayana. So the transcendental is to get to know him as a person, not just to free yourself from the material world. This verse means that because Lord Narayana is the supreme object of worship, therefore he is the subject matter described in the Vedas. Footnote 21. All right, so it's about him. These other things are side things. Let's say I'm talking about the God. And, you know, he's very conscious. And so how is he conscious? Well, he notices people around him. He notices what they're doing. You know, then accordingly he interacts with them. So we're talking now about etiquette. But what's the etiquette in connection with?
Quiet.
No, but I'm saying, how do we get into that conversation? We were talking about the person. You know. Or he says, you know, he dresses well. So then we talk about, you know, does the dhoti like this, his chadar like that, his belt piece like this. So now we're talking about dress and the social things. But what's its connection? To the person. So that means the whole Veda, everything it's talking about, is only discussing aspects of connection with Krishna. But because of the volume of it, we tend to forget the connection.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we get overwhelmed.
We get overwhelmed. Okay, footnote 21. The purpose of Brahmagyan is to know Narayana by first learning about the similarities between ourselves and Brahman. For example, every Vedic mantra has three meanings. One, the adhyatmic meaning is transcendental and is related to Krishna's holy name, which is Sarvanama, all names. Adhidaivic, the secondary meaning related to the demigods, and Adhibhautik, the meaning that can be seen with material eyes. Right? So this is another application. We'll get into this more when we get as the creation unfolds. Then we'll get more into this adhyatmic, adhidaivic, adhibhautik. Right. So here, adhyatmic. Then he is the center. He's the lord of everything. Right. Adhidaivic is the demigods to which his energies are functioning, and then the adhibhautik is what you can see. Right. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Different from what we used to.
No, because we're applying it in one area.
Here? Or this is general?
No, no, I'm saying the adhyatmic, adhidaivic, adhibhautik is a formula. Depending on where you apply it, then it appears to come out differently.
What's the difference between this and what we did in Katasandara?
This is applying it to the meaning of the Vedic mantra. So in other words, the Vedic mantra is about the Lord. Adhyatmic means in this way as the soul of everything. You could also put him as the adhidaivic, that he would be therefore the supreme worshipable deity. Right? This one's putting it is adhyatmic, meaning he's the actual center. He's what it's about. Like when we say kleshas, adhyatmic is who?
Us.
Right? Does Krishna have any kleshas? No. So there's no use to putting it that way. We're the one with the problem. So therefore, we're the adhyatma. You understand? So just depending on what you do there. So being applied to the verses, then it uses this form. When we're applying it to the manifestations, then you have the adhyatmic means the soul. You know, adhidaivic is the Lord, and adhibhautik are the forms that you see. So the adhibhautik remains the same in this. It's just a matter of what perspective you're putting here, because it doesn't mean the living entity here. It's talking about the Lord. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's just like the masculine and feminine principle. You apply it in one context, it works one way. You apply it in another, it works seemingly opposite. Right? So it's just like yourself and the floor. Who's being supported? Yeah, so that means the floor is in the masculine position. What about the floor and the earth? You understand? See, that's what happens. That's right. As we deal with it, we'll get used to it and be able to see how to apply it in different.
So you have to be able to which situation it applies, and then
yes,
you know what's the meaning.
Yes. Just like when you're dealing with sambandha, abhideya, and prayoja, you have to know where it's applying to understand how to use it. You know, or the shankar jumna aniruddha vasade to understand, because in that you have masculine and feminine, because each of the qualities is a masculine and a feminine. But they're both counted as masculine, that they're the Lord. Right? But as qualities, then they can be, as a manifestation, be feminine. But you're doing between the manifestation of it and the quality that is manifest, then that's the masculine and feminine. So you have all these different aspects. It's in a formula, these fundamental formulas, because they apply to everything, they have to be able to accommodate everything. So that's why there's so much variety, in its application. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, we'll get used to it as we apply it. Then we'll start to see, just like, over the years that we got used to these other formulas. So now this is one that comes up here, in detail. So it's, in the creation specifically.
The example of the kleshas at the Bhautika is the other living entities, because that's what you can see, right?
Yeah, that's what you can see. The Adi Daivikas and the demigods, because they're the ones dealing with that, because that's what goes. Because Krishna doesn't manage that, he only approves it. But in here, the purpose of the Vedic mantra is to know the Lord, so he's actually the Adi, he's the soul of the verse. Right? What you can see is the Adi Bodhi. Who's controlling that, managing, that's the Adi Daivika. Right? Example pertaining to Ganga continues to the next page. The purpose of the purpose of Brahmagyan is to know Narayana by first learning about similarities between ourselves and Brahman. For example, every Vedic mantra has three meanings. One, the Adhyatmic meaning is transcendental as related to Krishna's holy name, which is Sarvanama, all names. Two, Adhidaivik, the secondary meaning relating to the demigods. Three, Adhibhautik, the meaning that can be seen with material eyes. Example pertaining to Ganga continues to the next page. What to do? One, Bhagavatam associates her with Tirthapada, see 3.23.4. Two, Ganga Devi, and three, Ganga River.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, yes. The connection with the Lord, meaning that she has come from when the Lord poked his foot through the universe, then that water from the Viraja that comes,
yes.
Then that's touched the lotus feet of the Lord. So that's the actual essential point. Right? Then you have the demigod herself, then you can see the Ganga River. Does that make sense?
Yes.
In our vision, usually he goes from lowest and then might be to highest, but yes. We see physical, then we might see metaphysical, then we might see spiritual, and then we might see the transcendental.
Yes, yes.
But this is very different perspective.
Yes, because that's starting there. That's the whole idea. By studying and the Acharyas bringing these out, it widens our perspective. Because what happens is what's going to be presented first? What we can catch now.
Physical.
Yes.
Yeah, the cross.
Yes, and then we catch from there. Just like the discussion we had today on Brahman.
Yes.
Could we have had that a few years ago?
No.
But try. But in a sense, but we're discussing directly Brahman, how everything is Brahman, but not having any problem with Brahmavad philosophy, or not getting distracted into that. Previously, it was just a difficulty to see the difference between, Brahman and the material world, or Brahman and devotional service like this, but now it can be discussed. So it's just as time goes, it can be appreciated. So as we go, then we can see is that actually it's the other way around. That's why at the end of Gita, after explaining all these technical things, then Krishna says, well, actually you should look at it the other way around. But he only touches on it in that verse, and then that's the end, and then that's the end of the conversation. Because for the immediate application, you're going to look at it from your position. But factually, you should start from Krishna's position. Where will Mother Yashoda start from? From Krishna. Then she will look around what facility she has in her house. And if it's not there, she's going to get it. Right? Where do we start in the whole spiritual process? From ourselves. Then we're saying how to connect that to Krishna. And then if it doesn't work, we get out a crowbar or, a shoehorn and try to make it fit. I come from this section of society. And naturally, that section of society is the section of society for the whole world.
Of course.
Right? And so, therefore, I want to use this in Krishna's service. But the philosophy of what Prabhupada says, the Acharya says, it doesn't match. So, therefore, I'll use a crowbar and somehow or another try to fit. And if you still, and if you don't appreciate it, then we'll use the crowbar in a slightly different way. Right? So, then the whole point is then you end up making a mess of things, right? You change things, you water things down, you do. The whole point is no, it works like this. And then, so you start with Krishna. And that, but wait, but by looking at it in both ways, it has a value. But it's like you start from Krishna down to our position, and then from our position back to Krishna. So from our position to Krishna is not a problem. It's standard, so it has to be practiced. But since that's the first one we can relate to, we do that first. So we think of ourself to Krishna and then Krishna back to us. But he actually should do a Krishna to us and us back to Krishna. But anyway, you're starting it one way. You know, it's just like, let's say the child, they're learning to ride a bicycle. Now, which do you teach first? How to get on the bicycle or to ride the bicycle? Sure. You just give them the bicycle and let them get on. You put them on the bicycle and get it when they can balance, because there's no meaning to, if you can't ride the bicycle, there's no meaning to getting on the bicycle, because you'll get on and immediately fall off, right? So you show them how to ride it. Once they learn how to ride it, then they can balance, then you can show them how to get on. Yeah, get off also. That's a finer detail. We're getting very technical.
They'll get off.
Now, generally, they're pretty good at getting off.
That happens on its
own. Yeah. You know, they bump into the tree, bump into the dog, bump, you know, like that. You know, so. Okay. Going to the gutter, that's a good one. When you get off on that one's really gigantic. Yeah. Okay, does that make sense? So, in other words, all these elements are there, and which ones we can catch first, then that's what we deal with. Like in Gita, it's starting with karma yoga. Because we relate to the physical, so we can physically do something for Krishna. But now, on the material platform, if someone is accomplished at something, where does it start? Does it start from the physical, or does it start from the thought?
No.
They think about it, they meditate on it, they put it all together and all that, then they do it. But since we're not going to do that, because we don't have, there is no experience of Krishna and thinking of Krishna and all this, so we start with the physical. Right? Does that make sense? Then we develop the knowledge. Right? So it should be, we're thinking about Krishna, then, okay, what are the metaphysical elements to think about, and then what's the particular situation? You know? Does that make sense? Or, we would think about Krishna, here's the situation, here's the metaphysics, in other words, all these elements go together, so it's a matter of what's prominent, then that's who you start with. Like, you know, you want to talk to a dock worker. Where do you start? Meditation?
No.
Metaphysics? Or the physical? Okay. You're talking to the new age, you know, person there with the little crystal ball. Where do you start? Metaphysics. You understand? So that's, you know, or let's say you're talking to some variety of intellectual. Right, so you're going to have to deal with kind of both. The intellectual, but give the examples that will be interesting. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you start from wherever we catch. If you're talking, let's say, you're at a yoga studio, where do you start?
Yoga.
Right, with meditation. So all these things are there, you just start wherever it works. So it doesn't matter, but because after you know each one of them, then you can combine them all three together. But if you know one, you can still use it. That's what's so perfect about devotional service, because it includes body, mind, and words. So if you can't relate to all three, only the body, you engage the body, you're engaged in devotional service. Mind and words will follow. But if you can only relate to the mind, then mind is engaged. Then words and body will follow. Right? You only know how to gossip all day on the phone. You start with the words. Then, you know, mind and body will follow. Like that. Now, don't get us wrong. We're not saying those who gossip all day have no, you know, they're not using intelligence. does that make sense? So the whole point is since there are three aspects of devotional service, in devotional service it's not a problem. On the material platform, you don't do it in a particular way, it won't work. But the spiritual, you can start in any way. Like Prabhupada says, sugar is sweet, doesn't matter where you start. Someone gets a book, they start from anywhere, it's fine. They'll get benefit, spiritual benefit. Now, to get the full understanding, you should start from the beginning, go to the end. Right? But they'll get this transcendental experience by starting anywhere. So. Yeah. Okay. Okay. The ultimate purpose of the Veda is attainment of the adhyatmic, or the transcendental meaning. Brahma confirms this. Narayana para Veda. So then that's the whole. Okay. So now we have to go back here. Okay. To 45, right? Here someone may object. The first poet in the universe to sing them.
What?
I got a whole
number.
Ah, now I get it. I have 245. Now, if you were in the Wild West, that would be good. You know? But here, not so important. Okay, so now everybody else has 46, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they have a whole book of 45.
So. Okay. That would be a record.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Okay, so here is the... Here some may object. Is it not so that the Vedas also describe other deities who are also worthy of worship? That is true. Therefore, this verse explains that the other deities, the demigods, are meant for serving the parts of Lord Narayan's body. The different planets are also meant to attain his feet, and the different sacrifices are performed just to please him, and not to achieve heaven. These things are done to give a little pleasure to Lord Narayana. That is the meaning. Yoga, that is Astanga Yoga, and Shankya Yoga, i.e. Shankya, Jnana, and Astanga, are means to attain him. The purpose of all these are to bring us to bhakti. Austerity, which means concentration of the mind, is a means to attain him. And the culture of transcendental knowledge is a means to attain him. So austerity means performing your duty, means you have to focus. Right? Because Yudhishthira Maharaj is mentioning, if you want to get a result, then you have to have focus. So that means, focus means having the knowledge and performing your duty. Right? Then the endeavor, then dependence on the Lord. Right? So you have to have that focus. So here's the concentration of the mind, that's austerity. Because the thing you don't want to do is exactly where you don't want to focus the mind. The mind is happy focusing there, you're happy to do the activity. So technically it's not that I don't like to do this, I don't like to think about doing this.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's...
So Maharaj,
yes.
To accommodate this vision which is being brought up here, it's very broad. I mean, because then you can accommodate...
You accommodate everything, but the point is you're not looking at the item and taking it as an identity. Mm. See, the difficulty is if we get into, like you're saying, the New Age, then it becomes an identity. Mm-hmm. Or it itself is important. Mm-hmm. Right? No, it's about... the connection to the Lord. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, if I say the blender is important, does that mean plugged in or not plugged in? Yeah, so I could talk all day about the importance of the blender, but if it's never plugged in, it has no meaning. So the person talking about how the blender can do this and blender can, is talking about when it's connected. So we're talking about New Age, about how it's important, it's valuable, it's useful in the life of the devotees, the crystal does this, the UFO does that, you know, so many things, you know. How you say, you know, my sister-in-law has greatly improved since her abduction, you know. Does that make sense? Right, yeah. So, you know, it's just, I don't know what they did to her, but, you know, she's a lot better.
It's working.
Yeah, it's working. So... Does that make sense? So, but the point is if it's not connected to the Lord, it actually gives you no benefit. So there's no use in talking about it like that. So when you mention that it's of no use unless it's connected to the Lord, then people know, but they get disturbed, right? What is the forest of material enjoyment talking about? Grihastha life not connected to the Lord. That's, it's not talking about Grihastha, it's talking about Grihamedi, technically. Grihastha is the generic term just meaning somebody who has a house. Right? So that's the generic, but specifically then there's devotional service, and if it's not, then it's Grihamedi. Right? So just like attachment, if it's to Krishna, it's bhakti. If it's not, then it's material. Does that make sense? So, but one may get disturbed because, no, that thing has a value. But it only has a value when it's plugged in. If it's not plugged in, it has no meaning. Therefore, the adhyatma. If it's not connected to the Lord, there's no real meaning to talk about it. Then how is it getting done? It's getting done by the Lord's, how he is done through his energies. How are those energies applied? That's how the whole creation is there. Right, so then the demigods are part. Now, whether that demigod means he's sitting there in his seat, or you're talking about the planet, or you're talking about the effect on the surroundings around you, all these things are just that aspect. Right? Then there's the situation itself that you're in. So that in that descending process, then it starts with Krishna, then his energies, then what you can see, the gross manifestation. Is that right?
Yeah, so in the case of the person who is attached to this element, like a new age, he actually is not broad-minded, because if
he's
not,
it's narrow-minded, but they think they're broad-minded. Yeah. See, that's the whole thing, is if your position is different from others, then you think you're better. But all it is it's just like this. Let's say the person's conservative, okay? And they accept the conservative view. Its values, its methods, everything like that. Okay? Yes. But we will say the conservative is narrow. Right? They're narrow-minded. Okay. Now, we take the liberal, which is supposed to be the solution to the conservative problem of narrow-mindedness. So they're supposed to be broad-minded. Do they accept the position of the conservative?
No.
Do they accept their methods? Do they see any value? So how is, so that means only their view is, so then how is that liberal? How is that actually broad-minded? The point is whatever is of value within any of them is useful because of its connection to Krishna. Right? Rules are valuable when they're connected to Krishna. Individuality is valuable when it's connected to Krishna, but the individual and equality, equity, fraternity, it's not valuable if it's not connected to Krishna. What's its connection? We'll say, oh, you know, well, we're being liberal here. We have to work with the modern world. Fine. But what's the connection to Krishna? How does it connect? How does it make it better? No, the reason is not because it pleases Krishna's connection to Krishna. The reason is that it fulfills the aim of liberality. You know what I'm saying? So it's a goal. It becomes an identity. That's where the weakness is. But if you see its connection to Krishna, then you can work with anything. Prabhupada can work in any environment with anybody. He can work with cultured gentlemen. He can work down at the Lower East Side. It was not known for gentlemen. You know what I'm saying? A few come out of there. Like that, Mukunda Maharaj, he's a gentleman. Always has been gentle. Not sure you could say that about anybody else. Ramapati's quite cultured. But that was just the Mott Street. Everybody else were wild. Satsarupa's gentle. So that's three. You know what I'm saying? So the point is Prabhupada could work with the aristocratic, he could work with the cultured, he could work with the professional, but he could also work with the losers and the wild and the crazy. So that's the point, is he's broad-minded. But these other, when you start to take a position, then you can't work with anybody outside of your own group. So it's not actually liberal, it's not actually broad.
So could I conclude that only through the eyes of pure devotion can you really be broad-minded?
Yes, you can say that. Because pure devotion is the middle path. Nothing else is the middle path. All it is different flavors of right and left. Pure devotion is the only middle path. It's not that there's a few middle paths. No, there's only one. People claim to have the middle path. The Buddhists talk about it. You know, the New Age talks about it. Different people talk about it. But middle path is only pure devotional service, because the middle is as wide as a razor blade. And so the only thing that fits there is pure devotional service. Everything else is to the right or to the left. You know, like that. So that's the reality. It may not be very pleasant or digestible, and definitely not sugar-coated, and it was, and there was no story along with it.
But other than that, pretty good.
Yeah.
This is a very sweet conclusion.
Okay, well that works. You can see it that way. Good. Okay. What more need be said? He is the supreme goal to be obtained, the supreme Brahman. This is so because all things are manifest from him and dependent upon him. Right, so in other words, saying the supreme Brahman, because we're taking it everything Brahman. So that means the jivas, the internal potency, external potency, and the Lord is all Brahman. We're not looking at it from the mundane, no, there's the material world, and then there's Brahman. Right, that's the Mayavadis. Right, because that's why they have the Mayavad. They're not actually Brahmavadi. They call themselves that, but they're not, because then everything's, if everything is Brahman, means everything's Brahman. That means the illusion is also Brahman. It's just an inferior form of Brahman. That's the whole point. Okay. Okay, so then Lord Brahma continues. Inspired by him only, I discover what is already created by him, Narayana, under his vision as the all-pervading Supersoul. And I also am created by him only. Right? So therefore he's a scientist. But he's only discovered what's already created by him. So he's the original scientist. But just he sees the Lord is the essence of it. So that means the modern scientist only looks at the Adi Bhautik. Mm. Right? The Adi Daivik, they'll say, is the soft science. And the Adi Atmik, they'll say, doesn't exist. So not so scientific. Yes.
Interesting, if you trace the word science back, you come first to Greek schizo. And then you come to Indo-European state, and then you come back to Sanskrit, chinati, which means amputated or cut off.
Huh.
So it takes that shift in schizo that you're splitting, and then science becomes the intellectual process of determining what is the same, what is different, but actually it comes from being cut off from the source.
Yeah, okay.
So that's
because it's inferior.
So we agree, it is actually science that do it.
Okay. They are scientific.
They are cut off.
They are scientific.
Can you say again, a devotee, it's the only thing that they see.
Because they only see the gross. What they can see with the eyes. In other words, they can see with the senses. But the Adi Daivik means the demigods, the metaphysics of how it works, that they don't really know. They don't see.
No.
Adi Atmik, then they don't accept that there's God and it's His. It means they may, as an individual, have commitment to, you know, how do you call it? Intelligent design. Mm-hmm. Right? But officially, they can't say that this is what it is. Right? But unfortunately, they don't catch it. Officially, you can't say that's how it is either. That it's not like that. So then they would have to leave it. So if they were actually, you know, real science, then they would have to accept all three as positions. Right? Not how it works at all. But because they don't, then they become so-called scientists by being cut off. So that means then when they're cutting it off that they don't acknowledge the Lord of the others, then they're actually being schizophrenic.
That is just part of the fun we can have with this whole thing. Okay.
Srila Prabhupada explains the word discover, Srijam, with an example of Columbus's discovery of the Western Hemisphere. The Super Soul is the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, whereas the individual soul is the eternal servitor of the Lord. The Lord inspires the individual soul to create what is already created by the Lord. And by the goodwill of the Lord, a discoverer of something in the world is accredited as the discoverer. It is said that Columbus discovered the Western Hemisphere, but actually the tract of land was not created by Columbus. The vast tract of land was already there by the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord, and Columbus, by dint of his past service under the Lord, was blessed with the credit of discovering America. So in other words, he's done some agyata sukriti. Yeah. That's what it's mentioned. Anything that anybody has any position in the material world is due to agyata sukriti. So everybody who's successful has some agyata sukriti. You know, born in good families, educated, all these things is due to agyata sukriti. As we saw, what happened to Aranyakashipu? His contact with the Lord. But he doesn't know it's the Lord. He's not attracted to the Lord. Therefore, it only comes as material facility. Right? So he was, one would have to admit that Hiranyakashipu was very involved with the Lord. Yes. Right? So these are persons who are not that involved. So that's, therefore, they get that. So there's another perspective that throws kind of a wrench in our view of the world, is that anything that's working, it's because of devotional service. So if the guy's successful, then it's not because of what views he has and this and that, it's because of his devotional service. Therefore, he's following a particular path, and through that path he's getting results. But you have to see that path in connection with the path given by Krishna. What's connection of duties? What's the proper way of doing? That's through that he'll give. But he has to have the agyata sukriti to actually be successful. Does that make sense? So there's a lot more going on in the universe than we give credit for. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, similarly, no one can create anything without the sanction of the Lord, since everyone sees according to his ability. This ability is also awarded by the Lord according to one's willingness to render service unto the Lord. So you have to at least follow his rules. That's why piety is recommended. Then things go progressive, even if you want it, but then do what needed to get it. You know, it's just like the kid wants to do something. You know, they want to go for the weekend out with their friends for some program. Okay, but this weekend they were supposed to mow the lawn. So if you mow it, you know, during the week, fine. You understand? It's just things are supposed to get done. It works out. Then you get your facility. Yes. Right? One must therefore be voluntarily willing to render service unto the Lord, and thus the Lord will empower the doer in proportion to his surrender under the lotus feet of the Lord. So here it's saying voluntarily willing. So directly voluntarily willing, that's called devotional service. Indirectly voluntarily willing, then that's a agyata sukriti. It's connected to the devotees who are doing devotional service. Right? If it's just connected to voluntarily doing but not connected to the Lord or his devotees, then it's piety. But it's still, you're following God's laws. Veda has come from Krishna. Lord Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord. Therefore, he has been empowered or inspired by the Lord to create such a universe as the one manifest before us. Right. So therefore, from his devotion, then he's able to do.
Yes. Can we take it into the more gross? Like, if we are unwilling to render service, still somehow we will, because the gross rules of the universe will just...
No, the gross rules of the universe are there. You follow them, you'll get results. You don't follow them, you won't get results. So you have to surrender to the Lord. There's no way around it.
Yeah, but it gets more gross if we don't follow willing. I mean,
means even one is willingly, let's say the businessman is willingly investing in stocks when they're cheaper and selling them when they're more expensive. Right? So he's willingly do that, okay. But he's not seeing the connection to the Lord. Okay. So he's only following the Lord's rules of economics.
Yeah.
So therefore, that element of piety gets him results.
Yes.
But the ability to do that and have that, that's coming, you know, mentioned here from Agyata Sukriti. So he doesn't know. Columbus doesn't know. Right? You know, it's definitely, it's a, you know, Vyas knows, others may or may not know. Columbus definitely doesn't know. You know what I'm saying? He thought he's going to go that direction and bump into India. So that means he didn't know.
He didn't.
Now, the question would come is if he had, would be called China the West?
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah.
Next Kali.
Yeah.
But at least they got it right that this direction is east.
Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah. Okay. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, now Narad Muni asks a question. How does this distinction between the Jiva and Ishwara come about? Is it because you are inspired and he inspires? Three verses 18 to 20 explain the cause of distinction. The Lord is nirguna, untouched by the modes of material nature. Yet he accepts those modes by his external energy for creating, maintaining, and destroying the material manifestation. These three modes of material nature being further manifested as matter, dravya, knowledge, jnana, and activities, kriya, put the eternally transcendental living entity under conditions of cause and effect and make him responsible for such activities. O Brahmana, Narada, the superseer, the transcendental Lord, is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the above-mentioned three modes of nature. But he is the controller of everyone, including me. So he's the controller of it. He's controlling through the material nature.
Right?
Yeah.
The three modes of material nature and dravi, jnana, and kriya, can you say they go together?
Yes. Matter, dravya, so that would have to be the technical ignorance. Then your activities would be kriya, that would be passion, knowledge, would be goodness. Like, as it said, knowledge is mode of goodness, that's upliving. That performing activity for the results, that's your passion.
Yes.
And then the item that you're endeavoring so hard for, that's the ignorance.
When you put it like that.
That's why they package it. It means, in other words, to get one inspired, they have to package it very well.
Yeah.
Like that. Yes. So it's quite amazing.
Yes.
It's just like you go down to the warehouse, you know, the particular item is in a box, right? It's a box, it's got two flaps and all that, and then they taped it. As soon as you open the box, there's the thing, right? But then you go to, not to the warehouse, you go to the boutique. It's also in a box. You have the box, one, it's very nice and smooth and that. The other one's, you know, corrugated cardboard, you know, like that. Then the top is kind of like partly a little open because the only thing holding it is the tape. This one, the box is like perfect, and there's nothing hardly written on it. Some, you know, some numbers written or something like that. The other one that closes eyes, nice designs on it. You open that, then there's this thing that's perfectly tight fit that you have to very carefully pull out until you have to open the bottom of the box, pull it out. That one then opens again. And it's not that it just, you don't just open it. It opens, it has the reverse opening. This opens and then that, you know, it's like, you know, it's pretty far out. Then you open that, then there's something else in there, then the item is within that. Then you get to, right? And that then should come in a nice bag like that. And then even better is you tie a ribbon on the handle of that bag. Now we're talking, right? So that's dravya. That is called good quality ignorance.
I agree.
Yeah. Yes, so that's why the problem in the material world, everyone's after the dravya. So the jnana and the kriya, the knowledge, is simply to get the dravya. The kriya is to get the dravya.
Yes.
So of course, naturally, everything will come back there. But it's all about ignorance.
Yes.
It's all about ignorance. That's the thing, is that why we have to shift. It's about the other end. It's about Krishna.
Yes.
So notice here, it's interesting about the knowledge, his goodness, like this. Now if you put it into the activity, or you apply this, okay, you're going to, with knowledge of the field, that would be your sambandha, right? Then you're going to perform the kriya, and then you're going to get the result of the dravya. But now your knowledge to apply, because it's aimed at this dravya, has to be also knowledge of ignorance. So it's still situated in ignorance, because why would you make ignorance your goal? You understand? Here's an example where it reverses, where the dravya and the jnana become situated. So if you're applying it, dravya goes into the position of prayojan, so that's goodness, right? Goal, and then your knowledge becomes the position or relationship. Does that make sense? But at the same time, so that means all situation is all in ignorance. That's the difficulty. The material world means ignorance. Its situation is ignorance, while spiritual is, it's beyond material. It's transcendental to material. It's spiritual. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage of seeing according to Brahman. Then you're not situated in ignorance. You see in reality. Then you make distinction in the stages of aspects of Brahman. So then you deal with the supreme Brahman. Does that make sense? So that's why, that's the reason for these discussions about Brahman. So that you see it from that perspective rather than from ignorance. Is that okay?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki